Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. If we just let it be, na 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 na, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it, girl, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
Well, good evening, good night, good morning, good afternoon. You're waking up with Linda Mac Shan, and this is our Cross Country Connect segment. This show is being sponsored by CUC, Community Unification and Collaboration, an organization that helps you reach your goals, higher ed, workshops, classes, mentorship. But we focus on the young minds of our youth out here. You know, we have to do what we have to do. There's a lot going on out here. You know, it is foolish to be obsessed with past failures. And it's just as foolish to be self-satisfied with one small achievement. It is present that the future that are important, not the past. It teaches us a spirit of unceasing challenge to win over the present and advance ever toward the future. Those who neglect the spirit of continuous striving steer their lives into a ruinous direction. We go down, down, down. It's very important that we have to understand who we are and where we're from. And that was like a paraphrase from my mentor, Dasakari Tata, who has taught us how to live as humanitarians, how to create happiness for ourselves and happiness for others. We have to illuminate society. We have to start with ourselves, and we have to understand ourselves. We have our life coach, Karen Berg, coming on with us today, and the topic is similar. She might change it up with dealing with solitude versus loneliness. But before we get going, I'm going to play this for you. Get your pads and your pencils out, because you know Karen Berg, life coach, is going to steer you in the right direction. Just listen to this a little bit, and then we'll bring her on. Welcome in to Cross Country. Don't give up out there. Don't retreat. Don't defeat. Start with yourself first. Okay, it all begins and ends with you. And we have with us this evening Karen Berg, life coach, Cross Country Connect, all the way from Arkansas. Good evening, KB. How are you doing? Professor Berg, how are you? And welcome in.
Hi, Miss Linda. Hi, Miss Linda. Can you hear me? I'm always glad to arrive.
Yes.
Yay.
I hear
okay.
you.
Well, good.
And we're always glad to have you here. We know it's busy. It's crazy.
Yes.
We're on a different frame here. And we are very, very grateful that you come on and get us in line.
Yes, ma'am. But you and I do. This is the Cross Country Connection, and we take this time to connect. And a lot of times, if y'all listen to us before, Miss Linda and I mind meld, because we're on the same wavelength about these things that are very close to us in our hearts, and we want to talk. We want to take this time, this intentional hour or so, to talk about what's on our minds and hearts. And today's topic is so timely, as, you know, it's turning spring, and it's all about light and beauty and color and rebirth. And feeling truly connected in human in a spiritual sense. And so I feel like this topic is right on time. So I want to approach it from the discussion about kind of some of the differences between actual solitude or being alone, and then where you might get to the point where you actually start to experience loneliness, or the loneliness morphs and lingers into something that feels like chronic or aching loneliness that is a different sort of mental state. So let's go back. Start with this. What about the good things about being alone? Let's first talk about the power of solitude. That's the easiest part of this subject to tackle. A lot of mindfulness experts have written and talked, spent time understanding and explaining to others why spending time alone is a really important part of getting to know you who you are, okay? And mindfulness experts and a lot of our gurus in the spiritual realm will tell us that being alone, and this seems intuitive, can be restorative. It can be enlightening, and it can be even enjoyable. I mean, who of us doesn't cherish our alone time? I know I do. I cherish my alone time. Ms. Linda, I know you do. So one of the reasons that in the past, in these podcasts, I have talked about The Artist Way. That is a book that is one of the influences in my becoming a life coach. You know, the practice that I have now of life coaching now on as my side gig to my day job. And The Artist Way was one of the books that I read a decade or so ago that led to where I am now, because Julia Cameron's book helped me unblock my own creative urges. What the book The Artist Way is about is helping us learn to set aside time to explore these creative urges or gifts and to develop them. And, you know, I picked up some of her techniques like daily journaling and reflection, and then intentionally setting like 1 hour dates with myself. She calls them artist dates in her book. And that, you know, spending that reflection and creative time, you know, planned time alone to be creative, was something I started practicing about a decade ago, and I still engage in all of those activities. So I'm just sharing my story, as I often do, to try to kind of get people in this headspace. I'm much happier being alone, like giving myself time and attention and space to create and express myself creatively. I am more happy being alone now than I have ever been in my life. So I just want to put that out there, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this. They may feel the same way. And part of that, I think, is because we are overstimulated. Our nervous systems are overstimulated because we feel like we have no place to go to rest and recharge because, you know, we're just overwired in every facet of our life. So many of us are seeking this sort of self-imposed solitude, like literally with no cell phone or no Wi-Fi, or I've even, you know, I'm off social media for a week or two at a time. The self-imposed solitude can help you regain like a sense of self. It can help you renew harmony with nature. It can help you escape from sensory overload, or it can help stimulate creativity, like the theme I started on, and it can help awaken your spirituality, right? So, you know, many of us are actively seeking ways to find peace in a busy and demanding world. But how now, that's easy, right? The solitude part, unplugging. But how do you balance the need to be alone, that unplugging, that spending me time and all that, how do you balance that with the feelings of loneliness that you can start to experience, start to feel too disconnected? Okay, hang on there for a minute. Okay, are we good? Are we good?
Oh, we're good. Me? Yes, or, yes.
So I'm on this little mental journey that like we do where I'm saying the premise is that, you know, we learned how to be alone, I think. You know, the whole spirit and practice of mindfulness that has been kind of a trend in our lifetime that many of us have gotten on, where we understand how to do that. And that's been especially important to be able to do that as a human being to keep your balance and your center while you're being overstimulated by the outside world. If we weren't doing these self-care techniques, if there wasn't a whole industry dedicated to teaching us how to do self-care, we might be suffering mental burdens that put us somewhere we don't want to be. Okay, we as a human, you don't want to lose your balance because you don't want to feel too overwhelmed by an overstimulated or over-demanding external work because it's too important. We are spirits. You know, we are spiritual beings having a human experience. Though, you know, we truly are. We understand that we're only in these bodies for a little amount of time, and then boop, poof, we're gone. We're out of these bodies. So we're enjoying this now. So that is very human, a very human experience to feel the need to be alone and truly connected with yourself, but to also balance that with connections to other people so you don't feel, we can be getting emotional, so you don't feel truly alone, if that makes sense.
Makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense.
Okay. And you can tell I'm a softy, because people experience loneliness in different ways. Some people may only feel lonely at certain times. I happen to want to be one of those people. Fortunately, I don't feel lonely most of the time. Okay. I'm just going to put that out there again, sort of relating my own personal connection to this subject today. But some people experience chronic loneliness, okay? This is like a deep feeling of loneliness that can go on for a real long time. And some people report like you can even be around other people and still feel like you're alone. I don't have that. It's not an affliction I have, but it's very possible. And it's occasional. I think it's periodic. You know, people can have episodes of that and then think, oh gosh, how did I get here? Okay, so that's a great segue for me to say this. The psychology of, this is the teacher coming out now, like in the field of psychology, the psychology of feeling lonely is a huge field of study right now, and especially post-pandemic. It has risen even more because of all of the imposed solitary that people had experienced through the pandemic. And you know, some introverted people actually talk to us about enjoying not having the social pressure to meet with other people because they couldn't, because we had the imposed quarantine. You know, some people were relieved, and then some people like fell into depression. Like, oh, they just couldn't be apart from other people in so many intense ways all at once, and it just affected their mental health. So the pandemic gave us this enormous opportunity, you know, in the field of psychology to explore these evolutionary theories of loneliness. And of course, a lot of scientists believe that social scientists believe loneliness is part of our biology. And let me say a little bit about that real quick. When I say that loneliness is kind of baked into us as human beings, it's part of our biology, there are some social scientists who say that, you know, sorry, social triggers produce these psychological and physical responses that affect your behavior. Yeah, like me talking about this makes me cry. That's funny. Okay. So people describe thoughts and feelings of loneliness. Okay, let me fill in that field of psychology. How do we, as people, describe these thoughts and feelings of loneliness? So let me report back. What the science says is that after the pandemic, people were using words like anxiety, fear, shame, helplessness. And I'm saying those all without judgment. I don't understand them, but I'm going to put the words out there because a lot of people were reporting that they had these feelings and emotions. So these emotions, if you start to attach meaning to them, like when you were going through the pandemic, how you felt about your anxiety being from other people, how fearful you felt being alone, or how shame, how much, like, maybe shame would have come in the pandemic from feeling like you were letting other people down because you couldn't be there for them. And helplessness, similar, like helplessness, like not being able to help other people through the pandemic for people who, you know, felt stymied at that time. Okay. So if you went through any of that, we're saying that that your emotions not only influence how you obviously can change kind of what you believe and how you act, like how you behave. And so we saw people after the pandemic going into these downward spirals where loneliness caused them to withdraw even further from family or friends or anything they were connected to before the pandemic. Okay, so that phenomenon has more recently has been expressed like just like an age of loneliness, like all of a sudden, I mean, psychologically, we as human beings experienced a lot of loneliness in all of its ranges and stages during the pandemic. Okay, here we are in the spring of 2024, and I'm sitting looking out the window in my home office in the southern part of the United States, and in a southern state where everything is blooming. We've just gotten past our last freeze of the winter. Everything's green. There's pink flowers and purple flowers, and my daffodils finally exhausted themselves. They're already done. We had a burst of beauty and promise over the past, even last week, and I took time off my day job so that I have a whole 5 days that I can spend just with me time, just alone time. But what I wanted to say is I want to share a little bit more of my personal story because I think this is such a relative topic that I really needed to explore right at this time, like I so often do with these podcasts. And thank you, Linda, for letting me just talk them through out loud from my head to yours, because I want to add something to all this discussion of loneliness and coming through the pandemic and being in the season where everybody's happy and connected. I became aware of this field of communication, you know, and I come from a background in communication. There's a field called positive communication, and it's similar to sort of the field of positive psychology. These both have evolved in scholarship over the past couple of decades. But I didn't know about the positive communication field until I happened to encounter the idea of it at this new university that I work on the campus of. It's not a new university. I mean, my job is a new job working on that campus. Okay, so I work at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock campus where I'm a consultant for technology startups. That's in addition to my side gig as a life coach. It's my day job. So my day job is to help these startups, with all the resources they need to help provide financial footing so they can get their innovations off the ground. And because I work in a university campus again, post-pandemic, the College of Applied Communications has a program at ULR called Positive Communication. And that was new to me. So I kind of looked into it a little, and ironically, I was introduced to the whole community from the Arkansas-based scholar Julian Mirabel, who happens to be a professor who lives next door to my boyfriend. Ta-da! Okay, there's the connection. So I became aware of Dr. Mirabel's work at UALR, and I attended his Positive Communication Network seminar for an hour last week. I had just an hour during my lunch break in my consulting job to attend a little bit of this conference that is a bunch of scholars from the United States talking about, you know, these theories of positive communication. And Dr. Mirabel himself is a leader in the Positive Communication Network. it's a thing. There's a real association that he and his colleagues have started to really build this body of work and to help encourage these messages in the world. And Dr. Miraville's author of the book, The Art of Positive Communication. And Dr. Miraville hosted the conference through his position at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. And now I want to say a little bit about positive communication just to help. I've changed gears from, you know, talking earlier about solitude, balancing solitude with wanting to be alone with staving off loneliness. And so now we're going to talk a little bit about positive communication and sort of embedded into that discussion. Okay, so positive communication promotes connecting with someone in a meaningful way intentionally throughout your day-to-day goings on. Okay, so that whole field of positive communication is about how important connection is. And so Dr. Miraville suggests that some ways to do this are to offer positive comments and encouragement, or to listen deeply with authenticity during the day. You know, don't just go walk up to somebody and say, how are you doing? And they go, fine. And then you leave the conversation there. You know, it's about if somebody actually wants to talk about how they're doing, then you would turn your attention with affection to listen deeply. If they're going to share that with you, then you don't just pass that opportunity by. Or, you know, if you're like me, you're trying to find a way to help that person open up, to have a meaningful conversation, to know how they really are doing, to see if you can connect with them deeply as a human being. Anyway, Dr. Miraville is a proponent of taking time to reach out and connect intentionally with a friend, a family member, or a colleague. And he also says that happiness is found in the process of relating. And I just love that. That makes me smile. Happy it makes me when another person I've met on the planet says, happiness is found in the process of relating. I mean, those mm-hmm. words, they resonate deeply with me because I do try to live and breathe that every day in my work with my clients, with my former students, because I don't teach anymore, in my work, in my relationships with my colleagues, in my mentoring the people that I choose to work with, either as a mentee or a mentor, or any of these more intimate relationships that I try to have with the people in my life. So at that conference, in the hour that I had to attend, I wanted to point out work, one particular professor who spoke, and this is still at that communication conference I was talking. So Dr. Miraville introduced me to the field. I happened to have had an hour that I could spend attending this conference. You know, I heard a little bit of this guy's thoughts, Corey Reed, and he's a professor of interpersonal communications at the University of Arizona. He presented a brief segment of his work on the communication of affection in close relationships and how affection affects stress and physiological functioning. And in his latest book, which he was citing some techniques from, his loneliness cure, 6 strategies for being real connections in your life. And I felt like the whole universe opened up and went, ta-ta, while I was sitting there listening to Dr. Floyd that he wanted to share with other people about how to find real connection in your daily life. I thought, this is the answer to so many things, and I don't know why we're not talking about this or why I haven't heard people talking about this in my everyday life, even though I know I kind of live this way. I use these techniques, but I was delighted to hear that there are people actually studying and naming and talking about them and trying to teach people that we should be conscious of them. So, you know, psychology does study this, but the beauty of the communications is they psychology out of academia and put it out in the world. And
yes,
they're saying, okay, they're saying, we're not saying it's a cure. We're not saying there's a cure to loneliness. We're saying that you can proactively seek and practice ways to attract more intimacy into your relationships in your everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say that again, just because the way I wrote some notes before we started. I thought, what are we saying here? We're saying proactively seek and practice ways to attract more intimacy into your relationships and everyday life. I think those are powerful words.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
And why do I say that? I say that because why? People are hardwired for connection. It is in our human DNA. Now, I believe that. And I believe with healthy practice and healthy interpersonal boundaries, I will add, you can stave off these sort of self-reinforcing spirals, these downward spirals that we were talking about earlier. I think you can stave them off if you change some of the things you think and some of the things you say. And these are from, Dr. Floyd was saying this, and his book is about this, that these are not be-all, end-all, cure-alls for every stage or every experience of loneliness. But Dr. Floyd's techniques that he talked to and he pulled out of this book that he talked to us about the other day in the conference are ways that you can get unstuck in your loneliness. So here's some techniques, and these are so basic. I was like, yes, my man, you are talking life coaching language. Can I borrow those? And I don't have the book yet, but I was taking mad notes, and I thought, oh, yeah, this is how you disrupt the cycle of loneliness. And here he has inscribed it. And it was, you know, like I said, it's in his book somewhere, but I haven't read the book yet. But he's just pulling from his research and explaining his very perfect way from the data that he has studied what we need to do. So here it is. Number one, I'm going to give four things. And these also, I recognize them as coming from psychology too. These are cited in psychological texts, but again, they're taking it out of the communication field now and examining it from their lens. And they have other tools. This is just a very brief list. There are tools within tools within tools on this list, I want to say, because that's how academic scholarship works and the development of these techniques works, but on research base, I mean. So I want to say the four things, if you want to write them down, that would be our list for today, like we do in the podcast. Okay, so number one, okay, if you are wanting to disrupt the cycle of feeling stuck in loneliness, and you're in your head and you're thinking, something's wrong with me, I'm so lonely, no one wants to be with me, I can't make myself go out, I don't feel good, I'm not worthy, or no one feels about me like they used to feel. Okay, this is what I'm talking about, where you're ruminating and you're getting into this horrible mindset, lonely. Like, ugh, this is terrible loneliness. Dr. Floyd says disrupt the cycle by, one, examining the evidence. Okay, the way you examine the evidence is you say to yourself, where is the proof? Where is the proof to support the belief that you have? So let's talk about those beliefs again. People have cited that they feel, when they feel so lonely, they feel shame, anxiety, fear, helplessness, not being not wanted, being undesired, being unworthy, or whatever. So he's asking back, if you look for evidence in your life of those things, is there really any?
Mm-hmm.
Is there really any evidence for that? Look at yourself. Tell me, is there any evidence that you are not wanted, that you are anxious, or that you have need to be anxious, or that fear is warranted? Let's look at it. What is it that is making you believe that? Or we're challenging you now, are you only looking at evidence that confirms your belief? you're looking for evidence. And so I'm asking you to examine the evidence, and you go, well, there's not any. Or you go, well, of course it's all there. It's all true. Look at this. Look at that. Look at this. Look at that. Okay, that's called confirmation bias. You're just reinforcing something you already believe by looking for evidence that it is true. It's something we do as human beings. Duh. Okay, number two. Change roles. Yes. Number one, examine the evidence. Number two, change roles. What I mean by change roles, we are often more generous to other people than we are to ourselves. If you are one of those people that, if you're stuck in a cycle of, I'm lonely, I'm not worthy, I'm nobody to no one, if you ever hear somebody else say that, you might be able to console them or encourage them, but you might not be able to do that for your own self. Wait a minute. What am I saying? I'm saying, like, if you ever hear a friend say, oh, I'm so lonely, but I deserve to be lonely. Okay, how would you respond to that person? Well, I'm just saying, I'm saying this whole story out loud, what's going on in your head?
Right.
You know?
How would I respond to that person? Because I'd go back to that first word you said, is change, the change of the role. And, you know, my motto is, when you change, changes, okay? So that means if you're an individual that's always putting everybody ahead of you and putting yourself last.
Or making somebody else feel better when you should make yourself feel better. So the point of changing the roles is if you're in your own head thinking, I deserve to be lonely, then you need to step back, take a look at yourself, be a friend to yourself, and say, hey, self, wait, that doesn't make any sense. Why would you think that you deserve to be lonely? You're awesome, just like you would tell a friend that. Like you would tell a friend. So that's what the change roles is. I love that one. And when he said that, he only said it briefly. He said it in about 50 words, and it just took me 300 to explain it. But I had like only 20 minutes to listen to this guy. But number one was examine the evidence. Number two is change roles. Then number three, Dr. Floyd says, find the opposite. Okay, I like this. What does he mean by this? He said, if you're sitting there stuck in your head thinking, I'm so lonely for whatever reason, and you're not feeling worthy, he goes, he challenges, when can you point to times in your life that you know you had value? Can you rationally think of times in your life when you knew that other people needed you, or you knew other people wanted to connect with you, or you knew that other people wanted to share time with you, or you knew that people enjoyed your contributions to their life? You've got to be able to remember sometimes. So if you can try to articulate the times that you have been helpful or enjoyed by someone else, that is convincing evidence. Think about that evidence. That's that counter evidence we're talking about. But because you got stuck in this loneliness cycle and you forgot what it was like to enjoy knowing those feelings of connectedness, you just don't think you'll ever have it again. And it may take some work. It may take some work to overcome the stuckness by getting back into the practice of connectedness, or what I'm starting to think of as calling anti-loneliness practices. Okay. So while I was writing this and today and thinking about Linda, I was just thinking, oh my gosh, this is so important. This is like a revelation to me. Is maybe one of the reasons why I never get chronically lonely is because I practice so much of the anti-loneliness stuff so that that doesn't happen to me, so that I don't fall into that spiral, so I don't enjoy my solitude too much. Okay, does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
I hope I'm not sounding like a crazy person, but I'm trying to come around almost full. I'm trying to come around almost full circle.
Right.
Where the thinking, I know I tend to overthink, but the thinking is this, that by thinking, I enjoy my alone time. And honestly, I did start this whole podcast, I think I enjoy my alone time. But is there a point, I'm asking myself just as much as I'm asking you, is there a point where you treasure your own alone time so much that you become lonely? And then the swing back is, does your loneliness then become something of a deficit and drive you back because you want to avoid falling into the deep pit of loneliness? Does it actually serve as a useful purpose to drive you back, not be lonely? Okay. I think that's awesome. Okay. So the last thing, number four, is he says, our boy says, do a cost benefit analysis. And he said that, and I thought, what does he mean by that? Well, he went on to explain that, okay, basically I want to challenge you. How does it help you to believe that you deserve to be lonely? What is the benefit you derive from believing that you deserve to be in the stuck, lonely place? So, for example, let me give you an example. I want to give you an example because I had to research this a little bit to be able to talk about it. I thought, well, what does it mean when people say they have social anxiety? I've heard a lot of people post-pandemic say, I have social anxiety. And I don't know what that term means. And it's been stuck in my head because I was like, what do they mean by social anxiety? And I've been looking for examples of it. And so I wanted to follow that thread a little bit. If someone is doing a cost-benefit analysis, they're basically trying to determine, like, what is the payoff for me versus what is the cost to me? And I hear a lot of people saying I have social anxiety. So if people say that, I wanted to think about it in these terms then, by this definition. Okay, if you say you have social anxiety, what is your payoff for holding on to that?
Mm-hmm.
And then I started trying to unpack what are the reasons people would do that. Why would some of my friends who say they have social anxiety be wanting to have social anxiety? And I thought of a few. One is, I thought, well, I know this person. They might be feeling a little embarrassed or awkward in front of people, and they want to avoid that feeling. And then I have other colleagues where I'm like, it's the pressure. Friends and family members and actually tell me they have the pressure of small talk and not knowing what to say to people. It's just something they want to avoid altogether. And I've had my dear friend, when we went out for happy hour last night, we like to stay connected and start to miss each other if we don't see each other after a couple of weeks, because we do have meaningful connection, wonderful conversations. So he said last night, I said, and I'll say his name is Fred, but it's not Fred, but I said, Fred, what? I know you don't like small talk, and you, after the pandemic, you said you had some social anxiety, but it was really not the small talk. It was more like, I'm going to tell you what it was. He said it was that I felt like it was a prerequisite to have to go through the small talk to even get past all that, to get all that chit chat and small talk to get to topics that are meaningful to you. And he said it was just a struggle. Because he didn't want to have to. It wasn't that it was the pressure of small talk. It's just that the effort that it took to go through it to have these meaningful conversations that he just craved after, you know, so much isolation, it just wasn't worth it. So that was his cost-benefit analysis. It just wasn't worth it. And I know a lot of people had that same I know a lot of people had that same experience. So I'm so enamored with him and what he said that I said, man, I understand completely. I know, and that is so true. And so many people felt the same way, because I will say those of us who, you know, want to have meaningful conversations, like to have stirring, creative, or existential, or provocative or intimate conversations, and those are harder to come by. And because they are harder to come by, you just hang back or you don't put out the effort, or you might start to confine yourself, as my friend Fred said that he had done, which he admits at times puts him on the border of loneliness. Oh, my gosh. So there I've come full circle again. So I want to just say, I'm getting close to the summary. It's hard to balance the tension sometimes between your desire to be alone and your desire to not be lonely. And I think in the expression of that, we need to look at ways that that may be helping you, or conversely, how it could be hurting you. And life coaching language, how is it holding you back?
Mm-hmm.
And I will add to that, because this also came up in the study today. Feelings of loneliness are important to distinguish as symptoms or signs that you can do something about. And another finding from this research, your loneliness limits are different. They're not the same as somebody else's.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to give a personal example of that. And, you know, this is hard for me. I hope I don't cry again. So I remember the first time that my boyfriend said to me, I don't feel the need to be together as much as you do. So shocked when he first said that, because I personalized, I took it personally. I felt a little bit butthurt for a second. I was like, wait a minute, did he just say he didn't feel the need to be with me as much as I feel the need to be with him? What did he just say there? And yet, that's not what he said. His actual words were, I don't feel the need to be together as much as you do. And then I started thinking about him, and he's a very literal communicator. And I thought, wait, when he says the words, he literally means he doesn't feel the need to be together. In other words, what he's saying is, I enjoy my alone time a lot. And when I heard him say that, I thought, wow, I don't need to be butthurt. I need to be amazed that he knows himself so well. And he knows how much alone time makes him feel whole and connected to his self and what that does for him and where he gets that in the world. And I had been struggling with my own feelings of loneliness because I moved across country from California, where my children and all my friends and family and students are and all that. And my life, my whole network and web of intimate relationships was in California. And then I left California to explore and start whole new connections and relationships in Arkansas. And there was a deep chasm of loneliness, and has been for years while I've been rebuilding those connections, right? So my boyfriend pipes up and says, I don't feel the need to be together as much as you. Okay, so I felt like he was devaluing the time that he spends with me. I'm thinking to myself when he says those words, well, if you like being alone so much, why spend any time with me at all? I can find somebody who enjoys my company more because they want to spend time with me. I'm thinking that, you know, why don't you just stay single? And why try to have an intimate relationship? And then I realized when I was talking to myself in my head, I was thinking, well, wait, that way I'm thinking is all or none thinking. It's like I'm thinking that just because he doesn't feel the need to be together as much means he doesn't value the time he spends with me. Wait, that's not right. It's just that he really values his alone time. And he also, well, it's not an either or an all or none. He also values his intimate time with me. Does this make sense?
Yes. Makes a lot of sense.
So you're following my little personal story. Thank you. So I'm thinking, if my man loved me, he'd want to commit to spending as much time with me as he possibly can. Well, he is. he's spending as much time with me as he wants to or needs to. But the challenge I'm having is how much more of his time do I want him to spend with me? And also, yeah, how much of my time, how much of my time that I enjoy being alone am I willing to give up in order to spend time, that intimate time with him that I enjoy so much? Okay, stay with me. So I'm continuing my little story. I've been divorced for 10 years, and it's taken me a lot of that time, and maybe even some years before my marriage, to understand how much I do enjoy my alone time. Because I went from, mm-hmm, you know, 35 years of being single, 18 years of being married, 10 years of being divorced, and I'm still doing these chunks of my life where I've spent a lot of time with somebody. I spent a lot of time by myself. So I'm still trying to understand this alone time and how much of that I want, because I'm now 64. I'm heading into my twilight years. And I've been thinking that one of the reasons I enjoy this current boyfriend, who's close to my age, he's just a couple of years younger, one of the reasons I enjoy him so much is because he and I both know how to balance this struggle between need to be alone and want to be together a little bit intimately in a satisfying way with the connected time that we treasure with one another, because we're so unique. our connection is so unique. It's spiritual, emotional, intimate life together. So this is my thinking up to this point. I'm going to bring this little story full circle. I think that we both live in dread that if we spent more time together, we would ruin that nice balance that we have. And the reason that this is important is because he is now currently struggling with an impending move, actual move away, where he has to decide if he's moving on to his own solitary life, where the majority of his time would be spent enjoying his alone time, or whether he stays more connected and either forgoes that opportunity to do what his first instinct is in order, you know, give up some of that to have more of this and more of the real together, more real intimate time with another person that presumably he loves. So I think that we are not the only people that struggle with this kind of thing. Now, obviously, people who are married have made the commitment to spend more together and close connected time, and in fact sharing your lives with one another. But if you don't have a natural nature or financial reason, you know, like you want to have children, you want to build a family, you know, if you don't have a natural reason to want to be married, there are many, 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 many people that choose to partially connected so that they're balancing this need to be solitary, but with the need to have intimacy. And why do I say that? Because I think that is actually a very big trend. I don't think that the traditional, you know, long-term, one person, one partner, married kind of model really works for the way most people live in the world today. And, you know, divorce, pandemic, you know, financial gains and independence for women. A lot of trends have affected this, you know, over the past 30 years or, you know, the majority of our adult life. So that, you know, I think that these challenges to traditional ways of being intimate and not feeling lonely are really being examined, because we get to see what's happening really in the world because there are more choices to explore those things. So anyway, I wanted to kind of wrap up by saying that I think Dr. Floyd, the gentleman who's the author and professor whose book I quoted from earlier, his work, and there are Dr. Miraville that I met through UALR, who got me started on this track of thinking by attending his conference for an hour last Friday. And other people in their positive communication network suggest that we should express our affection in a myriad of ways, and that, as I've learned even just from my own examination of this, that your own motivation for not wanting to feel lonely could fuel your decision and how you act on a minute-by-minute, day-by-day basis. So what I'm saying is it can give you the motivation you need to communicate your proactively your need for connection to other people in a way that's meaningful, that helps you not only stave off loneliness, but just stay in the human race. So I think that other listeners or readers who experience something similar or who have had a challenge they face, they've come to a crossroads like me and my boyfriend are, where we, you know, might be splitsville, or we might try to negotiate the differences in our need to be alone and our need to be together. And who knows what that looks like. And, of course, for me, it's been distance. I've been telling him, don't move 3 hours away because that's a deal breaker. But anyway, it's definitely, I feel like it's a deal breaker. But I'm sure that other people have experienced something very similar. And I just want to close by saying I think that it's human. I think that we all feel and communicate experiences like this. And I did want to share before we sign off, Linda, too, and I'm sorry it's taken me so long just to explain this concept, but the Positive Communication Network has a website that I wanted to share that I think I became aware of because Dr. Maribel shared it when he sent to the conference attendees, sent the follow-up email. He said you can join the Positive Communication Network community by visiting www.positivecommunication.net. And I don't want to sound completely like a commercial for them because I became aware of them and I'm not a member of the network. I just was appreciative of what they gave to me by this thought experiment that I've gone through and that I'm sharing with you today because they opened that door last Friday and invited our minds and hearts to step through it. And now that's why I'm sharing it with you today.
Well, you know what? I'm listening. You know, I was listening and writing, and I was connecting. And first of all, before I forget, Dr. Floyd's book, what is the title of that book?
Dr. Floyd's book is called The Loneliness Cure, 6 Strategies for Finding Real Connections in Your Life.
Okay, repeat
and
that again, please.
It's The Loneliness Cure, colon.
Okay.
6
okay.
Strategies for Finding Real Connections in Your Life.
Okay, I needed to get that. And this has been so interesting. And when before I let you go, I was over here writing because we go back and forth, but this was such a, when you say positive communication and the importance of, having a dialogue. Well, I don't experience, as you were talking, I was thinking, I don't experience loneliness. I could be lonely and don't know it, but it comes from childhood, from your childhood. And as you were talking, I was speaking and connecting the dots and understanding. When I, was growing up, I was always busy and moving. They would make me take a nap every day because they called me Roadrunner. I had so much energy. But one thing that I do remember is some days I could play with my friends in the neighborhood, and some days I was not allowed to. I had to entertain myself. And, it was a structure there. And I learned how to entertain myself and had my routine, and I was always going shopping, and my bicycle was my car, and I'd get my shopping bag and anything you bought new and you couldn't find. If you could find my shopping bag, it was in there. I was always a shopper, and that I would entertain myself. So as I got older and got into, like, high school and stuff, you want to be with the group and you want to be with the crowd. It didn't matter to me if I was with the group or the crowd because I could go off and entertain myself. And growing older as an adult, when you say lonely, those teachings that was given to me, if I want to go to the opera, I go to the opera alone. I don't wait on anyone. anything that I want to do. So I didn't ever have that yearn to be a part of the party. You understand what I'm saying? So being able to mix and blend is a choice that I make. If I want to be involved in that, I do. If I don't, I don't. But I don't feel loneliness. Solitude and me time, I believe in. I can do that very well. And because I can pull back and do that, but this all stems from a childhood when you say happiness is found in the process of relating, and affections are there. I like to relate. I like to build relationships. I like to have dialogue. But I'm trying to wrap this around my head. And
No, that's right. That's right, Linda. But then well, and you're in the middle. You never have allowed yourself, or you're not built that way, where you fall into that cycle of stuckness and anxiety and feelings of total isolation. You're not that person. But I was pointing out that there are people, there's a whole range of expressions of loneliness, from I don't have it to I'm in the deepest despairs of stuckness. So you pointed out the exact, so you are absolutely sharing your personal experience that this is how some people receive this information. And I think that's good. But the teaching that I was trying to convey from the scholars who studied it, they have been able to look into the lives, the data, the research that they do, is to get real data from people real time who are having these deep, human experiences where they're reporting these dramatic feelings about their own worth as a person.
This is helpful. This is helpful because as you're speaking, I'm having some experiences similar to this. And as you're speaking, see, I deal a different way. But this has been so helpful because, like you say, we are different, and I'm experiencing
personally.
Yeah, with anxiety, and I'm experiencing, and I'm saying, okay, you never tell a person, I don't believe in that. You're going through something and people say, get over it. That's the wrong thing to say to
that's
an individual.
Right. That's right.
They're gonna be,
that's right.
You can't,
because
not a good thing to say. Because you can get over it. It doesn't mean that they can get over it at this time. So this is helpful for me to learn the technique of, and those questions. That's one question here. I highlighted it. That cost benefit, that cost versus benefit, and that number one, where is the proof to support these beliefs, okay? Because I always say the mouth is close to the ears and the ears is close to the brain. So if you keep telling yourself you're not worthy and I'm this and I'm that, that's just what's going to speak up and make that mental change up there.
100%.
That's what happens, and I've seen it. I've been around it. I know persons that do that, and this is helpful because not being a psychiatrist or anything, but understanding this stuff is real. Okay, so what do you tell the individual?
Right.
So what I do is go in with
the
positive.
Because you can communicate. And you can be a positive communicator. And doesn't mean you're a psychologist. It just means you recognize the symptom and you can use words to help bring something new into view for that person at that moment.
Yes. And I've been experiencing this. What a therapist said, you should go into psychology. No, I'm more into the positive communication because, my philosophy is that's the way I have to live my life anyway. So these things are not foreign to me.
That's right. Well, that's also in your podcast intro, Linda. You're every single time we do this, it's recorded in there that we're connecting communication. I mean, you say it.
Yes.
It's
yes.
part of who. Yes. It's your mission. It's what you do.
Yes. And you know
so
what's helpful
would,
for me?
I knew you would like this topic. I knew you would like this topic.
The helpful for me, Professor Bird, is that as I'm relating positive communication to others, it's it's a build up for me. It keeps me going. It works twofold. You know, it's like, no, I'm not walking in your shoes, but I can walk along with you. Okay, so what is the best way? And I'm finding, you know, we get emotional.
Okay.
You said something I had it highlighted about the emotions. We get emotional. Those emotions get up in there. Well, if you know who you are and you understand the persons have the thoughts of loneliness, the fear, the shame, the hopelessness, the anxiety, the fearfulness, okay? And if you're, your whole being is about putting that positive out there, even though, you know, you can go to the left every now and
then. Then your medicine, you are medicine for that person. You are medicine for that person. Because you're not a psychiatrist, you're not a professor of positive communication, but you, your energy, your Linda McShann energy and the way you express it back, you double it back, you are, if this is a negative energy over here, you can double up the positive energy and give them back. So we were just talking a minute ago about the cost benefit. Some people benefit by staying in that negative. But they can just the same benefit by giving up some of that negative for you and
you
by
know,
absorbing some of the positive. Can they not?
And what I do, I'm not cutting you off, and I've been experiencing it. You know, when you determine that you're going to keep it positive, because when you keep it positive, you make it happen. When you fall into the other side, negativity can draw you, but you have to have yourself balanced and recognize what's happening here. Some individuals, that's all they know, that's where they want to stay, and that's how they operate. But myself, I have to take a step back and kind of understand them. I can't change them, but when I change, it changes. So my change is, okay, how am I going to deal with this?
I don't know, Linda, if you can stop their spiral.
No,
I don't know if you can stop their spiral.
They have to do that. That's their responsibility. My responsibility is putting that reinforcement that you can. You understand? That's what my medicine is.
Right.
Thank you.
It's your medicine.
I take that needle and give them a shot of no. It's not that you can, it's that you will and you must, and you. And I don't even like the word have to, because people say have to me is like something I say, this is what you get to do. That word have to and get to
makes it sound like it's being imposed.
Yeah, it gives them another way. So I always say, this is what you get to do. So when
it's
a person
motivation.
Feels that they're getting to do something, it makes them feel a little better than saying you have to do it that way. So hey, this is what I get to do, and this is what you get to do. It's something about that get and have that kind of like brings another light bulb in there. So I try to be very, very careful, and not only with them, with myself. Because I journal, I take care of everything. You know, we have to work on ourselves over here. And I make a point because I'm very strong and very point to the blank. And most people will take my information or my suggestions as whatever. But I have to watch myself because I need to speak in a healing tone. When persons are going through stuff, okay, the more healing tones that you use, the better you can penetrate in instead of being upset.
Well, that's
getting
true.
All emotional.
But that's true, Linda. That's true. But also, people don't always know. They're not at the same level of enlightenment that you are. They may not recognize that you are giving them medicine because they need it, because it would raise them up to the next level of not feeling that pain. They may not know it yet. So speaking, how did you say? Speaking with, you know, it's not just the words, but it's with love and warmth.
Yeah, you,
because
you have
that
to
is
with your heart and the heart filled.
That's right, and that's how you get better, and that's how people can come to trust and believe you. Because
right.
you know that you exposed that vulnerability, or you allowed that pain so you could get through it to the other side, or you really looked at it and admitted
oh.
that it did not feel good.
And what
you know
what I find out through my experiences, Professor, what I found out, because I'm experiencing some things, but what I'm finding out is that when you say, I don't know exactly how you feel, but I know you're going through a lot, and I know it's not a good feeling, and I'm this and I'm that. Yes, you're that and a whole lot more, but that can all change. But it's up to you. I'm experiencing it as we speak, but I'm finding out a lot about you brought the perfect topic. Now I need to go. Now where is this University of Arkansas? I need to get in there, and positive communication is very, very important. But there's my philosophy is we have to, we say you keep it positive and make it happen. We say when you change, it changes. We ain't saying nothing about changing that other person. You got me? Because that's their responsibility. And you get out there and you get to do what you get to do, not what you have to do, what you get to do. That word get puts a different kind of spin on a reinforcing. It's like an empowered word, but you have to really, really
that.
Understand.
I love that.
Yeah, it's an empowering word for yourself. Okay, it's like, well, no, you have to go over here. No, I don't have to go over here. This is what I get to do. And that puts it like it's your choice, your opinion, and you decide if you're going to do it. And we all have do things that we do.
Or a better example of that based on our discussion today, and I've heard you say this a lot, think not what you have to do, but what you get to do. So if we're talking about trying to balance the people who struggle with balancing solitude and alone time versus, you know, the need for connection and intimacy, is and I know it's hard for you because you don't experience that you're way on the other end of the spectrum, but back to the topic for today for people who struggle with it. If the problem is, oh no, like my own example, I have to spend more alone time and be okay with that and not be with my boyfriend because he's moving away. But to your point, a way to positively communicate is, well, think what you get to do. Yes, you will be lonely, but you will get to have more space and time for other intimate relationships.
Yeah.
You will get to open your heart up again if you have to lose this friend because he wants to move 3 hours away and that's too far for you to maintain a meaningful connection with him. You will get to start a new life without him. And yes, it will hurt because you valued that intimate time more. And you wanted more of that intimate time with him, but y'all never negotiated. The two of you were never really able to negotiate how much of your alone time versus how much of your together time really was the right formula for you. So, and also what the deal breakers were. because we still haven't discussed those. I'm talking about my own experience. We still haven't discussed the deal breakers because the move is imminent. It hasn't happened yet. But I'm hoping to have that discussion like any minute now. So I do need to go because I am kind of in the middle of my little spring vacation. I'm off for 5 days. I thank you so much for giving me this podcast time as we do. It's been way too long. It was early January last time we did this. But I'm glad we got back together in March, late March, actually, it's the 20th. Is it the first day of spring? Well, anyway, it's close to it. And we are celebrating the spring season by talking about solitude versus loneliness. And sort of examining with Miss Linda, like we always do, our mutual experiences and our very different experiences, and taking the things we learn, like we're both like little sponges with all the people that we like to learn from, because she and I both are lifelong learners, and that's how we met, because I was teaching a graduate level class that she was taking at the University of La Verne in Southern California. And we both just love learning. And so that's why we have stayed together, because we find meaning and connection in this cross-country connection. And Linda, I love you. I cannot thank you enough. I so appreciate the time to just unpack this. And I will, I've got some notes. I'll capture those and put them on my blog, my KarenBerg.com blog. And then you will share the recording with me, and we'll share the podcast out through our social media channels. Like we always do.
Yes, we will. And I want to say thank you. Thank you. Go out and enjoy the birds, the flowers. I see your postings. And I've even started out in the spring thing. I'm doing spring cleaning, women's cleaning, and all that, all the season cleanings here. But I enjoy just getting out, just feeling the sun beating on my face. It is very, very necessary.
Right.
And before I let you go, I'm going to assign some homework so our listeners this evening, and that homework is, if you're experiencing this, we talked about solitude versus loneliness. I want you to ask yourself this question, as Professor Bird put into her thing, how did I get here? That's a start. Okay, start thinking, T-H-I-N-K, you know, our cross-country goals connecting in with our Think Thursday. We want you to think out there, to love yourself. Think about you. Stay safe. Stay aware. Stay kind, okay? But more so, start with you first. It all begins with you, and it ends with you. Professor Bird, enjoy. Enjoy your days off, and we will be speaking.
Thank you.
We love you. We love you. We love you.
Love you, too.
Thank you. Have a good one. Karen Bird.
Thank you.
Let's talk to you.
California drivers, driving without car insurance is unbearable. If you're looking for low-cost, reliable car insurance, look no further. California's low-cost auto insurance is a trusted option backed by the state. Signing up is easy and will help make sure you're in compliance with the law. Visit mylowcostauto.com or call 866-602-8861 today.
Get rolling.
Ralph. Part of the Kroger family.